From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, November 25th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Be there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work there. It's going to be a short week. Nice thing there. Yeah. Take a deep breath. Stiffen your backbone. Hold your shoulders back. Put a smile on your face and a keep a prayer on your lips. Everything's going to be just fine. Let's get everything started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, never question whether God has a sense of humor. We're still here. Nicely put, yes. And for some reason, he doesn't seem to have given up on us yet.
No, before this is over, I'm going to need a whole lot of serious therapy.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blog cast.
Twisted History.
Oh, boy.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
You think?
Some cool, some not so cool.
Yeah.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
All right.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1915. Albert Einstein presented the field equations of general relativity to the Prussian Academy of Sciences. Nobody knew what he was talking about, but nobody had the nerve to admit it. So they sat there, nodding their heads. Oh, very impressive. Very good presentation, sir. And it was on this day in 1973, the U.S. cut the maximum speed limit to 55 miles an hour. Yeah, they did this as an energy conservation measure, thus beginning 22 years of highway hell. Of course, most people drove 70 or more, figuring that their chances of getting bagged were pretty slim. Do you know, I had a glove box full of tickets during most of those 22 years.
You should be ashamed.
You know, the problem with publishing the blogcast so early in the day, first thing in the morning, is that sometimes news stories happen during the night that I don't catch. And boom, wouldn't you know it, right out of the gate, my first story about Matt Gaetz was already obsolete. Well, that's one of the hazards you face when you do what I do. And, you know, I probably need to change my posting time. Maybe move it up to late afternoon or something. But what I want to do is try to catch you before you start your day, or catch you to where you can listen to it on your way into work. But yeah, Matt Gaetz is no longer in the picture, as you probably know by now. And instead, it's Pam Bondi, also a great choice. And you know a choice is a good choice when the Democrats and the progressives are screeching about the choice. Already over the weekend, a lot of criticism from the left over Trump's choice for Pam Bondi. So I'm very content with that. I think this is great. All right. Now, I had expressed opinions recently about the stupid move that the Biden administration made in allowing Ukraine to use American-made missiles to hit inside Russia this late in the game. You know, we have a lame duck president, and now he's escalating things when it's been made very clear by Donald Trump, the president-elect, that he had a plan for putting an end to this war. Now, given the choice between war and peace, what would you opt for? I mean, don't you think that maybe it's prudent for us to opt for a little gamble here, that maybe Trump knows what he's talking about? Maybe Trump really does have a plan that could work? At least give him the opportunity to try. And then if it doesn't work, okay, plan B. Now, I don't know much about Vlad Putin, about his personal life. I don't know what kind of a personality he is. He's kind of hard to read. He seems to be somewhat icy. You don't see a whole lot of facial expressions on this man other than just that resting bitch face. Okay. And it's hard to read this guy. But obviously, he is a dictator. or wants to be a dictator. I don't know that much about the new Russian government that emerged after 1990, 91. I mean, Mr. Gorbachev set things up for a prosperous Russia and a really somewhat progressive country. But naturally, it's the nature of Russian politics to kill that sort of thing. It's been tried before. Now, they're not hardcore communist, but none of us would like to live in that system. I can pretty well assure you that. Well, it's interesting to note that there are others like-minded. I'm not the only one who was raising the alarm that the Biden administration was ticking this war up just on the threshold of a new administration coming into the White House. Now, officially speaking, the White House changes hands on January 20th. It's a ceremonial event. It happens every 4 years or with every change of an administration. And this time around, and none of us should be surprised, this time around, it's going to be handed over with a little dose of chaos from the left. Now, I mentioned this the other day. Do you remember how the Clinton administration left the White House for GWB? You remember that? Oh, my God, what a mess. They trashed the computers. They pulled the wires out from the walls. The phones weren't working. A bunch of vindictive little... You insert the word there, the word that you would like to use. Little creeps, okay? And we can expect that sort of thing here and now, too. I mean, the Democrats are no longer a legitimate political party. They are radicals. They are radical leftists with no decent goals in mind. I mean, what can you say about a political party that champions things like transgenderism for adolescents? I mean, that's just downright immoral. How can God shine his light on a country like that? It's absurd. So now we have the Biden administration ticking things up. And make no mistake about it, they're under pressure from NATO. Okay, the Biden administration, are under pressure from NATO to tick things up a little bit. NATO wants to have the permission to fire these American-made missiles into Russia. Well, that's going to do nothing but escalate things, and we don't need that. Well, now Tucker Carlson, who is arguably the most influential conservative in the blogosphere, he had a former leftist on his program, a fellow by the name of Glenn Greenwald. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's a co-founder of the publication The Intercept. Greenwald used to be a hardcore leftist. I won't say that he's a hardcore conservative, but he's pretty much in that same area that Tucker Carlson is politically, and that's reasonable, okay? I like Tucker Carlson. He's great. Well, C. Douglas Golden of the Western Journal had an op-ed that he published, let's see, when was this? Back on Friday. And he said the winning presidential candidate in the 2024 election cycle promised to find a way to negotiate a peace between Russia and Ukraine. Days later, the current president ignored this mandate and authorized Ukrainian forces to use long-range missiles inside Russian territory. Lo and behold, they did. To Tucker Carlson, formerly of Fox News and currently social media's most influential conservative pundit, "That's the most evil thing I've ever seen in my life." Direct quote from Tucker. Now, that quote came during an interview published back on Wednesday. And it was published on X with another notable dissident journalist, the aforementioned Glenn Greenwald. Now, both these guys were particularly alarmed that after the election was over, Biden allowed Ukrainian forces to use these, what they call Army Tactical Missile System, or ATACMS, to attack inside Russia to defend territory gained in an August offensive. Now, the Wall Street Journal reported the weapons could initially target positions in the Kursk region, where Russia has amassed more than 50,000 troops, including some 10,000 soldiers from North Korea. all in an effort to recapture the territory. Ukraine's forces seized the territory earlier this year. Now, that's the account from the Wall Street Journal. Now, while this possibility had been briefly floated in May by Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, nothing was done on it, and probably for good reason. Because as the Journal noted in its November 18th piece, Biden administration officials were loath to greenlight the strikes until now for fear it could cross a red line for Russia and provoke a wider conflict, which at the risk of sounding flippant, duh, well, yeah. The escalation's continuing apace. As you might imagine, CBS News reported that the long-range weapons were first used by Ukrainian forces on a Russian military facility in the Bryansk region, which was followed by Russia launching a barrage of missiles at Ukraine Thursday in its first major retaliation for the strikes. So here again, it goes back to this thing that I've talked about for years, and that is this spy versus spy cartoon that we used to see in Mad Magazine as kids, you know, tit for tat. Now, it's unclear whether the missile fired by the Russians was a regular ballistic missile or an ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile. Does it really matter? It's the damage that's done that matters. And Ukrainian President Zelensky said it was the latter, ICBM, which isn't exactly a positive sign. So Carlson and Greenwald, both skeptics of the continuation of the conflict, should be noticed. Started their conversation with the nature of this escalation. And Carlson said, let's quote him here. He says, "I think we're watching the most evil thing I've ever seen in my lifetime, which is the lame duck administration leaving the next administration with a world war, with a nuclear conflict by allowing Ukraine, a proxy state of the United States, to strike within Russia." Now, who could argue with that? This is very obvious to me. That's exactly what's happening. And everybody knows that it's not Joe Biden and it's not Kamala Harris who are pulling the strings here. This is being done by the unknown president of the United States, the deep state. They're doing this. I'd like to have some names. Is John Bolton behind this? An unelected Dick Cheney or Liz Cheney behind this? Who's behind this? Who are these individuals who make up the deep state? Why hasn't there been some effort to identify them by name? This needs to be done. If we're going to put an end to this kind of madness, we need to find out who these names are that make up the deep state. I know John Brennan's in there. James Clapper's in there. They may not have a titled role, but they're working as advisors, consultants, cheerleaders, whatever you want to call them. But they're in there doing the rah, rah, rah. Go after Russia. Go after Russia. Do they give a damn about how much American blood ultimately is going to be spilled in this effort? But that's where they're heading. You see, these bastards aren't happy unless there's a war somewhere in the world that we are prosecuting. And this madness has to stop. Boy, it sure is refreshing to know that I'm not the only one still asking questions about this guy, Michael Byrd, who was the Capitol Hill police officer who killed Ashley Babbitt. Well, thanks to our friends over at the Western Journal, Samuel Short. That's the name on the byline. He says, "We're learning more about the Capitol police officer who fatally shot unarmed Ashley Babbitt on January 6th of 2021. In a letter dated this past Wednesday, posted by Just the News the same day, House Administration Oversight Subcommittee Chairman Barry Loudermilk wrote United States Capitol Police Chief Thomas Manger." Now, Loudermilk raised questions to Manger here about the promotion process for USCP officers, with the subject matter being Michael Byrd, the officer who killed Ashley Babbitt. Now, Byrd was reported to be promoted in August of 2023, But Loudermilk's letter indicates he shouldn't have been anywhere near the police force with an incredibly poor disciplinary record dating back to the early 2000s. Wow. Well, Just the News compiled the following from that letter. A failed FBI background check to purchase a weapon, failing a shotgun qualification test, a suspension for a lost weapon, being referred to state prosecutors in Maryland after shooting at a stolen vehicle that was fleeing. Well, regarding the stolen vehicle incident, which took place in 2004, it was found that Bird shot while his neighbor was in the line of sight. Yeah. What's emerging here is a guy who seems to be trigger happy. Bird also left a loaded service weapon in a bathroom at the Capitol Visitor Center in 2019. That's a story we did hear about. And that weapon sat there for 55 minutes before another officer found it. He was subsequently suspended for 33 days without pay. Now, the full letter includes more details about Bird's history, as Loudermilk notes a verbal altercation between Bird and an officer at a football game in Montgomery County, Maryland, dated to 2015. Loudermilk even makes note that the subcommittee's investigation into Bird is incomplete, as some information is missing. Now, he wrote, USCP records indicate three additional USCP OPR, that's Office of Professional Responsibility, referrals against Bird. However, the records related to these investigations are reportedly missing. And while Bird's promotion justifiably raises plenty of questions, how is it that he was working at the Capitol as an officer on January 6th? In fact, Bird has a history of irresponsible firearms etiquette dating 17 years prior. He lost his weapon, forgot a weapon in a bathroom, and shot a vehicle while his neighbor could have been hit. Additionally, he failed his shotgun qualification test. So USCP should not have trusted Bird that day at the Capitol, or trusted him on the force at all. Bird would claim he saved lives by shooting Babbitt. She was the only person killed on January 6th, despite the countless lies following the event. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick died of natural causes a day later, while four other officers died by suicide much later. That needs to be looked into. What prompted that? No officer died that day or died later from physical injuries by any Trump supporter present. That is a fact. Now, American Military News reported a statement by retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg that President-elect Donald Trump did, in fact, request the National Guard to be present on January 6th, and that was a request that was turned down by none other than Nancy Pelosi, one of the most evil people to enter politics in this country. Trump himself tweeted that day to stay peaceful. That tweet is a matter of record. Now, the official left-wing narrative to demonize the president and his supporters is a complete farce. We all know that. But Bird's record is more proof of that. I want to read to you an op-ed. It's not long, but it's very important and it's well-written from Pedro Israel Horta. Let me just read it word for you, okay? He said, the recent presidential election has ushered Donald Trump back into the White House, setting the stage for forming a new government. As appointing key officials unfolds, the focus naturally turns to critical roles within the intelligence community, particularly the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA. Here, I offer a perspective from my 19 years of service in the CIA under four different presidents and eight CIA directors to ensure the next CIA director navigates and reforms the entrenched bureaucratic structures often called the deep state. John Ratcliffe has emerged as the selected appointee for the CIA directorship. His tenure as the Director of National Intelligence and congressional member with oversight duties over the intelligence community demonstrated his willingness to confront the intelligence community and CIA's abuses of power over the Russia investigation. However, leading the CIA involves more than just the director. It requires a robust team to effect real change. History has shown that even the most capable directors can become mere figureheads without solid support. The case of John A. McCone stepping into the shoes of Alan Welsh Dulles in the 1960s illustrates this vividly. Dulles' personnel ruled the CIA under McCone, who was kept in the dark about CIA activities. More recently, John Brennan's influence lingered within the agency under Mike Pompeo's leadership. Gina Haspel served as his deputy director and then as director, continuing Brennan's role through his surrogates. Ms. Haspel was a Brennan hand-picked and groomed protege who reportedly played a key role in the Steele dossier. Now, this raises the need to ensure the new director has the organizational support to enact change. Strategic appointments for real change begin with the deputy director. The choice of deputy director is pivotal. This role must be filled by someone who can complement Ratcliffe's vision and tenacity and tackle bureaucratic inertia head-on. Specifically, they manage the agency downward instead of the career civil servants overseeing the deputy upward to force their will on the director. Many are unaware that the roles of the director and deputy director are heavily consumed by protocol duties, including managing communications and meetings with foreign dignitaries and providing counsel to the president and key administration officials on intricate and demanding intelligence issues. Consequently, this often leaves the bulk of the operational management to career CIA staff, who are sometimes referred to as the defenders of the bureaucracy. This leads to perhaps the critical position of the chief operating officer, the number three official at the agency. The chief operating officer, or COO, is the operational heart of the CIA, managing daily activities and serving as the linchpin between the top echelons and the operational staff. A COO aligned with the director's goals can significantly enhance the director's ability to enact policy changes. The new director must ensure that through his deputy and COO, the agency is managed downward to implement the director's reforms instead of the career civil servant bureaucrats managing the COO, deputy director, and director himself, as history has proved through McCone and Pompeo. However, the appointments must also include critical stakeholders. The Office of Congressional Affairs, OCA, is often underestimated, but it's crucial in shaping congressional perceptions and support. A director needs an ally here to prevent the agency bureaucrat from undermining the director's agenda through legislative channels. Often forgotten is the Office of Public Affairs, the OPA, which influences public and media narratives about the CIA. Tight control over this office can prevent leaks aiming to discredit or pressure the director to serve the bureaucrat's wishes instead of the bureaucrats serving the director. We cannot forget the Office of General Counsel. Given past abuses in this office regarding personnel and whistleblower issues, it's essential to ensure legal alignment with the director's reforms. The OGC, again, that's Office of General Counsel, litigation division has been a stalwart defender of the bureaucracy, seeking to crush whistleblowers, making it nearly impossible to create an agency culture of accountability that aims to stop abuses of power. The task at hand is immense. The CIA's internal culture and the broader intelligence community's dynamics resist change. The narrative centered on past directors like Porter Goss, who faced significant internal opposition, underscores the personal and professional resilience required for this role, which requires substantial help from personnel aligned with the director's vision and plans. Porter Goss was embarrassed by CIA leaks, leading to his short tenure. Any incoming director must know that they could suffer the same fate as the entrenched career bureaucrats who will seek to resist change. as Mr. Ratcliffe or any successor steps into this role. They must be prepared for a battle against the internal saboteurs and the inertia and resistance within. The support system they build around them will determine their success in leading the CIA and truly reforming it. The goal should not merely be to dismantle the so-called deep state, but to foster an environment where transparency, accountability, and integrity are the new norms, ensuring the agency serves its true purpose of safeguarding national security without overstepping its bounds. Good luck, Mr. Ratcliffe. Your journey will test your resolve like never before. Still, with the right team, you might redefine what it means to lead the CIA in the 21st century, returning it to its original intent with a culture of accountability, transparency, and freedom from abuses of power. Wow. A good one. And again, that's just an op-ed that was volunteered by Pedro Israel Horta. The fellow had, 19 years of service in the CIA. So you'll pardon me while I exercise privately and here on the blogcast a little skepticism as to whether or not that job can even be done. Ratcliffe is a good man, and I'm going to assume, for the moment anyhow, that Mr. Ratcliffe has what it takes to assemble a good, strong team who can do as was just suggested by Mr. Horta. But I found that op-ed very interesting, coming from a man who did spend 19 years inside the CIA. He knows how the system works, he knows what powers the system, and he also seems to know the evils that lurk within that system. And we're not really concerned just with the CIA when we speak about the deep state, because there's also the National Security Agency and the DNI. So, here again, as Mr. Horta said at the end of his op-ed, good luck, Mr. Ratcliffe. To the Comedy Corner with Sean Kent.
So I was listening to a podcast today, and it was really interesting. It was by a guy who gives lie detector tests for a living. Do you guys think they're accurate?
No.
You're right, they're not. And this guy, he goes around telling people, don't give them anymore, they don't work, because, and you can look this up, this is true, he said all you have to do to beat a lie detector is when you lie, you clench your butt cheeks together as hard as you can, and it lowers your heart rate a little bit, and they can't tell. You know what's awesome? All of you just clenched your butt cheeks, didn't you? Even you. I saw it. That's the first time you laughed tonight. And it's not even true. I just made that up to make you do it. But you couldn't tell I was lying because I clenched mine. Oh, man. I love traveling. I went to the Grand Canyon with my family recently. Clap if you've been to the Grand Canyon. All right, now back me up on this. Clap if there's no guardrails anywhere at the Grand Canyon. That's weird, right? And I asked the park ranger, I said, does anything bad ever happen because you didn't put up guardrails? And you can Google it. It's true. He said, yes. He said, every year, on average, we lose anywhere from 10 to 12 people over the edge at national parks. Here's why. They were taking a selfie and they fell. Right? You've heard that, right? And my wife was with me. She was like, what a tragedy. And I was like, yeah. Is it? Or is the Grand Canyon just doing the Lord's work? You know what I mean? Not so much a canyon as it is a national IQ test. Not just Americans, though. You can hear the Germans. They're like, 9! Park ranger's like, no, you're number 10. Oh, man. I went to Walmart yesterday. You guys been to Walmart lately? Boy, I got lost, dude. It's so big. You can walk into a Walmart with a shopping list like, all right, I need tires and lettuce. And a basketball, a Bible, and a gun. Grandma's prescription, sunscreen, a hula hoop, preparation H, flat screen TV, car battery, kayak, and an engagement ring.
Make it a great Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.